back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today's episode, I'm chatting with Billy Meredith about his calendar year Triple Crown self-supported FKT. We chat everything long trail, including how he dealt with record-breaking snowpack, his mantra of remembering tomorrow, and what it's like to walk home. Did you ever watch the show Portlandia? If so, do you remember the episode where it was a thing to put a bird on it to make it cool? Everything had birds. I feel like that's the trend right now in athletic wear, except it's not a bird, it's putting a hood on it. The problem is that these hoods never seem to actually be functional. So a huge shout out to John G, our podcast sponsor, for making a wool blend hoodie with a functional hood. Their Rover Merino hoodie not only has an elasticized opening to make sure the hood stays on when you're running, but also a high enough collar that keeps the neck warm, and it also has a ponytail opening. Check out the Rover and the rest of the John G lineup at johng.com, and remember to use code FKT for 10% off. Billy, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I'm really excited to talk to you about this.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to chatting with you, especially as a fellow calendar year Triple Crowner. It's kind of a unique experience to get to talk to someone else that's done it. So thanks again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot more people who have done the calendar year Triple Crown now than when I did it. Do you happen to know what the current number is?
I think I was 18.
Okay.
There used to be a website that had it all listed, and I couldn't find it anymore. But I was chatting. There was one other person that did it this past year, and we were kind of messaging back and forth, kind of figuring out. I think I was around 18, something like that. But
Yeah. Wow. I feel like I was like the sixth person.
It's like, yeah.
And that wasn't that long ago. It was like so recent, you know?
I know. Yeah, it's growing.
Yeah, definitely becoming more popular. So for our listeners who don't know what the Calendar Year Triple Crown or the CYTC is, can you just give a real simple, brief overview?
Sure. Yeah, basically it covers the three major long trails in the United States, which is the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. And it's essentially just through hiking, all three of those within one calendar year. So basically from January 1st to December 31st. And the total mileage kind of varies depending on what route you take on the CDT. The PCT and AT fluctuate maybe just a little bit each year, but the CDT has several different alternates. So I think it can be as long as 8,000 total miles between all three, or significantly less, just depending on the alternates. As far as I know, I don't think anybody's gotten really close to 8,000.
No.
Just reading up on it, I think like 76 is maybe like the higher one. But yeah, my total came out to 7514.
Yeah, I think that's about what I did as well. So backing up a little bit, your first through hike was the AT.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. And that was in 2019.
Yeah.
And then you completed the calendar year Triple Crown in 2023 without doing the PCT and CDT in between, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I had done some smaller, shorter through hikes, but I had not done the PCT or CDT before, except I did the Colorado Trail and the Continental Divide Trail, so a couple hundred miles there. And then I actually had done Washington and Oregon on the PCT before.
Okay, so you'd actually done almost half of the PCT
prior.
Yeah. Yeah. That still seems like a pretty fast track from starting through hiking to doing this epic 7,000 plus mile long hike. What made you want to attempt this?
So when I first heard about it, it was on the AT in 2019, and I was going through Duncannon, Pennsylvania. And me and my buddy were stopping in the Doyle to get like a burger and a beer. And I remember they had some kind of like chalkboard or something up, and it said like, congrats Anish on like calendar year Triple Crown. Cause I think you did it the year before, correct? 2018?
I did in 2018. Yeah.
And I just was like, what is a calendar year Triple Crown? And I remember the lady behind the bar was like explaining it to me, and I could not wrap my head around doing all three trails in a year. Cause it took us 150 days to do the AT, which is 2,200 miles. And granted, you know, we took 0 days and took our time, but it was also by far the hardest thing I had done up to that point, and the most amazing thing I'd done up to that point. But I just couldn't help but shake what it would take to do a calendar year Triple Crown after I finished the AT. And after I finished the AT, I started getting into ultra running. So I ran a 50 miler as my first ultra race. And then a couple months later, like 2 or 3 months later, I ran a 100 miler. And I kind of realized, like, I started running in 2017. I ran a 10K. I just remember thinking running 6 miles sounded so impossible. And then I realized I was under-indexing myself in running 100 miles. It just didn't seem possible. And then I read Born to Run. I was like, people actually do this. So I've slowly just been kind of pushing myself to, like, break my own mental boundaries or just self-imposed limitations. And so I was like, if I'm under-indexing my running by, you know, 50 times or whatever, when I was running 2 miles at the beginning and then I ran 100, like, what else could I do and through hiking beyond 2200 miles? That, and I was looking at the FKT website and I sorted it by, like, the longest route possible. I was like, what's the longest FKT you could set? And the calendar year Triple Crown came up and I'd already been thinking about doing it. At the time, there was only, I think, 12 people had done it when I first was looking at doing it. And it just seemed like there's very few things, like, in the athletic world that, you know, less than 20 people have ever achieved. And so that kind of appealed to me, just to, you know, be one of the first, I guess, at something. So yeah, and I was just wondering why so few people had accomplished that route, since it had been around for a relatively long time, and just wanted to see if I had what it took. And I wanted to complete the PCT and the CDT, so why not just knock all three out at once?
Yeah, why not? So talking about, you know, kind of under indexing yourself and, you know, deciding you wanted to do this calendar Triple Crown, you didn't start January 1st, you know, which you can to do a calendar Triple Crown. You started May 2nd on the PCT. So why choose that day? Why choose there? Why did you start so late?
Well, for one, I was working as a snowboard instructor in Steamboat Springs last winter, and our season ended like early April. And we were having like the second highest snow year ever on record. So I decided I was going to stick around for the full season. And so there's a couple things. That was one of them. The other thing was, when I went into this, I was like, I'm going to try and do the FKT. To do that, I would only need about 7.5 months. So I don't have to start in January. And then Cam Honan, who had done it in 236 days, started in May on the PCT. So I kind of knew it was possible to do it that way. And then lastly, I'm from Georgia. I'd done the AT before and I kind of timed it to where, or I guess I organized it to where any section I've previously through hiked, I hiked in the opposite direction this time. So I went northbound on the AT in 2019. So this time I would be hiking southbound on the AT, which I figured, I don't know, might keep it interesting. And right. I'm from Georgia, so I just kind of use that as motivation to get home. And then I timed it to where, like, basically if I set the FKT, I'd be home for Christmas. So that was, like, another thing. Mm. And then the section on the PCT I had done previously, so Washington and Oregon, I hiked southbound. And so this time I went northbound. And then even the Colorado Trail, which I had done before, northbound, I went southbound. So every mile I had previously hiked, I went the opposite direction. Mm. But yeah, I wasn't giving myself enough time, like, I guess the most time to finish it, because I wanted to finish this, obviously, and complete the calendar year. But the FKT was, like, a major goal for me, because I saw you and Jeff had obviously submitted your FKTs for this. And that was...
Well, I didn't actually.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, no? Okay. Well, they're on the
it's
website.
It's on there, yeah. But I didn't.
Okay. Well, I saw the FKTs are on the website, and they've been on there for several years. At this point, and nobody had done it faster. And yeah, I feel like, so I guess technically my FKT was, because yours was technically listed as supported, and Jeff's was self-supported, but nobody had broken either one of those. So I was like, yeah, I just thought it'd be cool to maybe make this a thing and see if people wanted to try and set FKTs on this route. So yeah, that's why I started so late, I guess you could say.
And so was wanting to walk the miles opposite directions why you hopped over to the CDT? Because you weren't really on the PCT for very long, I don't think, before you went over to the CDT.
Correct. Yeah, I was only on the PCT about 2 weeks. No, that's not why. I was planning on doing all three without flipping trails, just because, I mean, that's only been done, you know, two or three times maybe. So I thought that would be cool. You have to go pretty quick to do that or to hit them in good season. But this year they had the highest snow year in history in the Sierra.
A little bit of a problem.
Yeah, right. So my goal was to go northbound on the PCT all the way through, flip over Sobo CDT, Sobo AT. But yeah, I was going to hit the Sierra in late May and really any other year, or at least normal year, I think that would have been okay to deal with that. But yeah, just reading reports, and so many PCT people were getting off trail. And granted, even if I did battle through that snow, it would have just thrown my pace off so much to where I don't think I could have recovered from that. So I decided to flip over to the CDT, head south, or I started northbound and then actually flipped that one too, just to let the snow melt in the Sierra. So I only got about 2 weeks on the PCT. I got off at Tehachapi, and then I did New Mexico before I flipped on the CDT.
And so when you got to the New Mexico, so you hiked all the way to the Colorado, southern Colorado border.
Almost. Yeah, just about. I just got off a little before just for convenience reasons. At like Ghost Ranch.
At Ghost Ranch.
Just because it's close to Santa Fe Airport right there.
And then is that when you went up to Montana and started hiking south?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Because there was a high snow year in Colorado as well, which I can speak to being in Steamboat.
right.
And so a lot of people were just kind of walking like the bike route around the San Juans. But I wanted to do the San Juans, so I flipped up and decided I'd deal with like a lower snow year in Montana in early June than the high snow year in Colorado.
Right. I mean, the weather is such a huge factor in the calendar Triple Crown and like success and how much you, maybe not how much you enjoy it, but how much you have to deal with, you know, less than ideal conditions. So it sounds like you had to deal with pretty much everything because you had record high snow years.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, I am assuming you also ended up hiking through Hurricane Hillary, was a super unusual event in California.
Yeah.
Did you also have to deal with fires? Like just what were the big, big weather environmental issues you dealt with on the Calendar Triple Crown, aside from obviously the snow?
Yeah. So I did hike through Hurricane Hillary. I was in the Sierra for that. And yeah, that was kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
I just had a really short day. I was hiking. So the rangers were like warning people kind of probably you should get off trail. And a lot of people in the Sierra were just hiking out. But I basically just decided I was going to hike until it started because there was no telling, you know, they're like, oh, it should start tonight. And it never did. So I started hiking the next day. I was going up over Glen Pass basically when the rain really started. And I got soaked, and it was in the 40s during that. When the hurricane hit. So coming down Glen Pass, I was getting pretty cold. I saw an unmanned ranger station on the other side, decided I was just going to like stop and warm up, just take a little shelter. And then the second I stopped moving, I was kind of just like jackhammering a little bit. I was like shivering like crazy. And there was another couple there that had kind of the same idea. And at that point it was pouring and I didn't know the next place there would be any cover because you're just hiking above tree line. So I decided to call it after 7 miles that day, and we ended up sleeping on that porch, which was fine until the wind kicked in, and then my sleeping bag got soaked, and we had to fortify the sides with like these tarps. So yeah, and then at that point I wasn't sure how long the rain was going to go into the next day, and I really didn't want to just lay there in another entire day like burning a 0 day, not in town like relaxing but being cold and trying to ration my food because I didn't want to get off trail. So I was like rationing my food. I had like one packet of meatballs on Glen Pass, hoping that the next day it would clear up, even though it wasn't calling for it. But sure enough, it did. And I was able to keep hiking the next day just through raging rivers. The rivers were all flooded.
Did you run into Nick Fowler when you were out there?
No,
or was
I
he
didn't
like
see
in his
him.
Cave?
No, I didn't see Nick. Yeah, I did. I heard about that on this podcast actually, where you guys like posted up in a cave for a while. I don't think I ever bumped into him. I think we would have recognized each other. But yeah,
you're probably the only two people hiking through the hurricane in the Sierra. So
right, yeah, exactly. So, anyways, yeah, I was able to hike on. Just the rivers were flooded, and at one point I hiked like a mile up the trail to like find a crossable spot that somebody had actually told me about. And then aside from that, the fires I kind of lucked out on. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. But part of that was the fires that were going on the PCT in Washington and Oregon. There were a couple. There was one closure that I did like an extra 14 miles to get around on the reroute. And then another one by Stehekin opened. A lot of them were opening right as I got there, but that's because it rained for like a week straight at one point.
The trade-off.
Yeah, exactly. So the fire closure is open, but then, yeah, I just got soaked for a week. And aside from that, my last day in Washington, it dumped like 6+ inches of snow.
Oh, wow.
And that caused me to like cancel all my flights because I was doing 42 miles to the border and then like 30 back the next day, roughly. Mm-hmm. And then when it snowed that much, I realized I probably wasn't going to get in my 42. And I was only carrying like enough food for the day. So I got off to Mazama and then resupplied, rebooked my flight and all that stuff. And yeah, other than that, and then of course I hiked the AT and freezing cold conditions, and the Northeast was really challenging in late October. Mm-hmm. It was snowing, a lot of ice. It was raining on me and then it would freeze overnight. And so my shoes and my socks would be frozen in the morning and I'd have to like thaw them out before I could even start hiking and stuff. And then just those descents and the whites were crazy at night, covered in snow. That was wild. So
I was wondering how the whites were for you, because I mean, I also, when I did my calendar triple crown, was in the whites in late October. Well, I guess it was early October, but you know, there were 100-mile-an-hour winds in the presidentials, like, and it was just a sheet of ice. So did you have any like major weather that you had to, you know, wait out?
So opposed to waiting out Mount Washington, there was like a really nice day, to do Mount Washington, but also like 23 miles away from getting up there. I think it was something like that. But so basically I didn't get to Madison until about 3 p.m. And at that point they were calling for the winds to be up, like wind gusts up to 85 miles an hour and like constant winds between like 50 and 60. And sunset was like within 45 minutes. So I was going to be up above tree line in the dark, just getting knocked around by these winds. And so I called it a day after like 13 miles or something that day. And I actually flipped around it. And then I hiked northbound for 2 days because the next 2 days, the winds looked just as bad up there, if not worse. It was like calling for 90 mile per hour winds. So I hiked northbound for 2 days and then I did the presidentials all in one day when the winds were really low, but then it was like 15 degrees and snowing, something like that. So I took the cold over those winds.
Right.
And then aside from that, Maine was completely flooded when I got up there.
Oh gosh.
It was a totally different experience than 2019 when I went through. I was fording like 4 or 5 times a day, almost waist high in the 100-mile wilderness. Oh, wow. This time it was crazy. And I even cut my day short one day when there was a ford at night that I just didn't really feel comfortable. And then once I got out of the Northeast, it got a lot better. I just got more snow and like Rowan Highlands and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You mentioned not wanting to take it to burn through a 0 day in the Sierra. So how many 0 days did you end up taking, days where you didn't hike at all?
Mm-hmm. I think it was 4.
Wow.
Yeah.
And were those basically just like travel days, like when you were getting from point A to point B?
Not even. I think I took 1 0 travel day, technically. I had 2 other low mileage days. So I took a 00 in Montana on the CDT. Because, yeah, in June in Montana, I got rained on like 23 out of 25 days. It was just gray and not very much fun. I didn't realize it was that gloomy in Montana that time of year, but it sounds somewhat typical. But it was really wet. So I was debating kind of quitting at that point. And I took a 00 to like really get just like my mind and my body back on track. So and then in Oregon, I took a 0 day. And then traveling from the PCT to the CDT, I took a 0 day. Other than that, I don't think, or maybe, maybe I had 5. I think I had 1 more getting back from the CDT to the PCT. But yeah, I mostly would hike and then do half days and then like catch a flight out.
I can't imagine, like, I would be so stressed, like, not being in town the day before my, or the day of my flight, like hiking.
Yeah, that's why I had to cancel it in Washington, is because I was kind of pushing that boundary. Cause I just didn't want to burn days like that. Cause I could tell it was going to be close to Cam Honan's time. So like when I finished the PCT, I hiked out 30 miles, got a flight at 11 o'clock that night to Bangor, Maine. I hardly slept, maybe like 2 hours on the red eye. Got into Bangor, got a ride up to Katahdin, went up and down Katahdin, and then I was going to night hike a little bit longer, but I descended Katahdin like in the pitch black, like crazy winds up there.
And it was
freezing cold. And then the ranger, when I got down, was really nice. He was like, hey, I can get you a lean-to if you don't want a night hike. And I took him up on that. So I did like 10 and a half miles that day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So maybe like, since we're talking about, you know, 0 days and that sort of thing, it'd be interesting to kind of know some of your other stats. Like, obviously, if you weren't taking zeros, you must have had a fairly high mile per day average. And like, do you know like about how many miles a day you were averaging? Maybe it varied by trail.
I'm not 100% sure by trail, but in total it was, yeah, including, you know, travel, 0 days, everything, it was 32, like on the dot.
Wow.
32.0 something. And then as far as elevation gain, it was like 5,556, I think, feet a day at 32 miles for 234 days and 9 hours.
Did you have a watch to track that, or how did you calculate that?
I did. Yeah. So I had a Coros, and for a little bit, I was trying to track it every day. And then, yeah, it only lasted maybe like 2 days, like battery wise doing that. And then I realized, yeah, burning battery was costing me time because it takes away from my power bank, which takes away, you know, it all adds up. Right. So I stopped tracking it on my watch about, I don't know, maybe a quarter of the way through, a third of the way through. But every day I would go on the Far Out app and I had screenshotted where I'd camped that night. And then I would just subtract it from where I was camping that night. And then I would see my miles, and then I would do the little like, elevation profile and like map it exactly my mileage. And then I would write that. And on my Instagram posts, I was doing like a weekly update where I'd post like my miles, my elevation gain. And then I just added it all up. My dad actually had an Excel sheet where he was keeping it. But yeah, we just added it up at the end. And that's where I got the 75-14 from. Cause otherwise I was paying really close attention on the CDT just cause I wasn't sure how long that was going to come out to. But then the AT is pretty self-explanatory. But
yeah, the AT is very precise. So unless you do a bunch of Blue Blaze trails or something, you know very precisely what you've done there. What was it like to hike the AT for the second time, you know, so on familiar terrain, but also hiking toward home, like for you mentally, maybe, like what was that experience like?
Yeah, so I did kind of strategically place the AT last for that reason. Also I knew just kind of physically it would be the toughest trail, and going into it, I was like, if I already have two trails under my belt going into the hardest one, like no way I can quit at that point. But then sure enough, I'm in the whites in late October and it's crossing the brain for sure. But I knew just kind of that trail holds a special place in my heart, just being my first through hike. And yeah, I just knew kind of passing those white blazes, every time, it was kind of just like a little emotional boost along the way that I think helped a lot. And just like having the memories too, kind of flooding back as, oh, like I camped there. Like we stayed at this hostel. Plus with it being winter or early or late fall, early winter on the AT, it was nice having the bail off points. You have so many road crossings, so many hostels, to seek shelter from if it was raining or just super cold one night. A lot of times I could bail off, but along with that, it gets dark really early, so you can't hitch, you know, after 4:30 or whatever. Right. And then a lot of the places were closed. So it was very different than my first through hike, where it was a very social trail. We had a tramley. Yeah, you could call up trail angels or whatever. This, you had to like call a hostel ahead of time just to see if they were open, or because you just couldn't trust the hours that were posted on online or on Far Out or whatever. So it definitely took some logistics planning in that regard. It was nice having the community staying at the hostels, at least earlier, like in October, and stuff like that. It was motivating. Right. And then knowing that, you know, my friends and family were going to be at the finish and I could just hop in my parents' car and drive straight to their house, like 90 minutes away, instead of having to like get to and from a trailhead. That was just such a good feeling to sleep in my own bed in my childhood room that night.
Right. Yeah, not have to hike the approach trail. Or did you hike the approach trail?
I did hike it. Yeah, because I got in at night to Springer.
Oh, no.
And I'd be like, I'm done, Springer. I know. But I knew my friends and my family wanted to see me like kind of finish. And I was getting in late at night. Or it was like 8 o'clock. But, you know, it had been dark for hours by that point. And I was like, what's one more night on the trail? And it was kind of sentimental to be able to like camp on Springer and just like soak it all in.
Right.
I just got in, got to bed early. I actually waited a little bit in the morning to start hiking so that I could, it would be more convenient to have everybody like get there so they wouldn't have to wake up, you know, too early on a Saturday and stuff and whatever. So yeah, I kind of waited in the morning until like 8 o'clock, and then I hiked down to get there at like 11. So
you're so conscientious of everybody coming to meet you. I'd be like, I am done. You want to see me? You be on that mountain.
What's one more night? What's 9 more miles at that point?
It's a pretty nice hike down. And yeah. much more so than going up it.
Well, it was funny because the approach trail was, I got within a half mile of the arch and the approach trail was closed. They were doing some
kind
of, so then I had to take some like side trails around it. And then right away, it was going to bring me around the parking lot through the double doors. And I knew they were all going to be like waiting at the archway.
At the arch.
So like literally on the last like 100 yards, I cut across back onto like the last little section of the approach trail and just so
like
I can
a bushwhack finish.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, it was kind of a, it added like 20 more minutes, but it was literally like the last half mile through the arch. It was like trail closed. I was like, are you kidding?
Oh, funny. Why was it closed? Like, were they just like,
we were doing maintenance or something. Yeah, I got halfway down the stairs and it was like on the stairs of the falls. They had it closed.
Wow. They're like, no through hikers will be coming through now for several months, so we can close this. So I'm kind of curious a little bit about how, I mean, you mentioned like, I mean, on the AT you're almost completely alone. I assume you saw people like here and there on the other trails or maybe hiked with people off and on, but by and large, like, you would have had to like self-motivate like every day. Like how did you do that? How did you like when you're contemplating quitting, you know, up in October in New England, like what tools did you use to like get yourself up and get yourself going every day? Like, especially when you didn't necessarily feel like it.
Yeah. One mantra that I've kind of carried with me through the past couple of years is just, I think two words, remember tomorrow. And I steal it from this guy named Jesse Itzler. But it's been powerful for me because when you're approaching a really big, challenging goal like this and you're in the heat of the moment, you know, emotions are running high, you want to quit, just remember how you're going to feel tomorrow when you do quit. You know, once you've had that warm shower and you've slept in a bed, you know, if you're in a marathon and you quit on mile 20, you know, how are you going to feel tomorrow knowing that you were so close? That kind of thing. So one thing I would do is, you know, if emotions were running high or I was thinking of quitting, I'd say, okay, I'm going to quit at this next town. Because, you know, when you're on trail, you can't just like quit. You're in the middle of the woods. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to quit, you know, when I get to Cascade Locks. And then when I get there, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to sleep in a bed tonight and see how I feel tomorrow. And then, you know, after that shower, after the bed, I'm having breakfast the next morning. I'm like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit better. But I just wouldn't allow myself to like make any big decisions when I was feeling emotional, or if I was injured, it's like, okay, let's rest and heal up and just make sure that you're in a good mindset. But yeah, I always tried to think forward, like, how would I feel if I did quit on this? And just like reflecting on your why as you go through it, reminding yourself why you're doing it. I just like kind of had like a morning gratitude practice where like when I my first miles, I wasn't like listening to music and I would just kind of think of what I'm grateful for. And you know, that this is chosen suffering, which is very different than, yeah, a lot of people in the world are a lot less fortunate. And you know, I'm choosing to be out here and to experience this. And I'm just grateful to be out in nature. But on those rough days where, you know, my legs are killing me and stuff like that, it's like, you know, I can bail off at any point. This was my decision. Nobody's making me do this. And yeah, and just being in nature, you know, if you're having a hard time, you can stop on a mountaintop at the next view and just kind of center yourself. Just, yeah, kind of keeping my emotions in check, I guess, is a big one.
Yeah. No, those are all really, really excellent points. A lot of that is what I do as well. I don't know if people still say this, but when I first started through hiking, everybody would say, like, if you want to quit, wait 100 miles. And that kind of reminded me of like what you were saying, you know, quit at the next town. Like, it was always like, okay, if you still want to quit in 100 miles, because for most through hikers, that's, you know, what, 3 or 4 days, 5 days maybe. So it's like keeps you from quitting in an emotional response.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah.
Like when I most felt like quitting, it was whenever I would think about how many miles I had left, how many days I had ahead of me, rather than just thinking about this one day, like, can I take another step forward? Yes, I can do that. And if I can, then I will. But once, yeah, I just kind of had to hack it and be like, okay, when you wake up, it's going to be hard tomorrow, but you know, you got to get up with your alarm. Don't snooze it. That kind of thing. But yeah, waking up was by far the toughest part.
I have a hard time waking up in my off trail life. Like, I hate mornings. So like, yeah, I hear you. Like trail, you know, yeah, especially when it's like raining or it's cold or, yeah, your shoes are frozen or, yeah, those things. And it's like much nicer to just stay in the sleeping bag and not face that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once I could get those miles, like getting 10 miles in by 10 a.m., it was just like, okay, I'm back at it. I would feel fine just after like even just a mile normally. I would feel perfectly fine and be in that right headspace. Like, okay, we got it. But it's crazy all the doubt that just is like flooding in the morning of like why you shouldn't get up and get after it or why you should quit. But once you take that into account, you're like, okay, this happens every day and like you can almost expect it, then you can hack it, I guess. And yeah, it gets easier. It's literally just a decision every day of like, I mean, I just simplified it. It was like, yes or no, am I going to do this? Like at a certain point, I just like wasn't even hiking for myself anymore. It was like, wow, like everyone, you know, is cheering me on along the way and just people that I met too. And I'm getting a lot of messages on Instagram from people I've never met. It's like, all right, like I got to do this for them even, you know, more than me. That kind of pulled me through on the AT, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that is having people you care about or even complete strangers, like being invested in what you're doing can really help, especially, you know, if your self-motivating tactics are faltering,
Which
it
happens.
Is really nice to have that. Yeah, it does always, you know, there's always moments. So yeah, that's awesome. So we're basically at the end, like we didn't get through all my questions. I feel like you and I could sit here and probably talk for like 3 hours about this, but, kind of a closing question. What advice would you give to anybody who wants to maybe tackle the calendar year triple crown?
I would say don't like decide before, if you really want to do it that bad, decide beforehand, like if you want to do it and if you're going to do it. Like in my mind, I went into this, I'm like, I'm finishing this, like no matter what. Mm-hmm. So that's why when I had those doubts, I knew it was just like some kind of glitch in my brain or my brain was playing tricks on me. And I knew I didn't really want to quit. Cause when I went into this, I was like, I'm finishing this. Like I'm dedicating almost a year of my life to this goal. Like I'm going to finish it unless I'm injured or something crazy happens on the trail, like a natural disaster. So
crazier than a hurricane.
Right. But if you're a through hiker and you're thinking about doing this, it's not all that different than your average through hike. I think people tend to overthink things a lot. Like they want to talk to everyone that's ever done one and like, and it would be good to get advice or like to do some research, of course. But I think the biggest thing you can do is just have some miles under your belt. So I had about 5,000 miles of through hiking under my belt before this. So I knew what it was like to be uncomfortable and what an average through hike is like. So I would first recommend to do a through hike.
Right.
But other than that, I don't think you need to like wait years and years or like just wait for the perfect time or a low snow year. I think me doing it in this high snow year kind of proves that too. Like the conditions are never going to be perfect. And I think you just kind of have to commit to it. And that's your biggest thing. Because when people are just kind of doing so much research and asking everybody, like you have to realize that they're not going to be the difference of whether or not you finish or get through it. That comes down to you and your mindset. And just start off easy, like kind of like I did, whether it's 26s or lower. I would just say ease yourself into it. And I mean, it's just like a normal through hike. When people are asking me all these things, like, what do I need to do the calendar year? I've had a couple of people ask, like, what I did wasn't that much different than what I do on the AT. Just the miles were different. And I didn't carry a stove, which was kind of a big thing for me. My biggest advice would just be all in. Because when you're out there for that long, your brain will try and trick you out of it. And if you don't have a good why behind it, you're probably not going to stick it through. And I actually did have someone message me when I was on the AT and they had done like 6,500 miles of a calendar year and said that they had quit and was like kind of encouraging me to keep going. And that was kind of powerful too. But yeah, for me, it was just kind of my mantra, like remember tomorrow. Cause he even said, he was like, I think about it every day about how I wish I had finished it. And thought about getting back after one again, but that was kind of powerful too. But you just have to be really rooted in your why and just don't overthink it too much and just take it day by day. Like I had talked about before, you can't just think, oh, I have 5,500 miles left. If you think like that, it's going to be too overwhelming. You just have to get through each day, take it one day at a time. But yeah. I would say just start it.
Yeah.
Get out there.
I think that's great advice for life in general.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing. It was fabulous. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for chatting with me. It was cool. Like I said at the beginning, just to talk to somebody else that's done it. I've never done that before. So thank you again for having me on.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, Billy, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and you can follow his adventures on Instagram at @BillyMeredith_. I also want to give a special thank you to John G. for supporting the FKT podcast. John G. makes trail running essentials designed to go further, perfect for your next FKT. And beyond making super durable trail running apparel that's backed by a 5-year run everywhere guarantee, they also donate 2% of sales to clean water programs in the places we run. So far, John G. has donated $1 million to clean water and counting. Take advantage of a 10% off coupon at johng.com with code FKT.